Basically, I take human garbage from around the world and I reprocess it. You will have no future contact with the outside world. No visitors, no phone calls, no letters. For all intents and purposes, you're dead. Was there anything you wanted to add?
To never turn your back on me again.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to Take Me to Your Reader, discussing adapted science fiction at its best and worst. I'm Seth.
I'm James.
And I'm Colin.
And this time we were going to be doing The Hunt for Red October, which would have turned it into The Hunt for Red November, but we're kicking it to next month into The Hunt for Red December. The hunt will eventually be fruitful.
Well, and all those dates were applicable.
Because we discovered it's a Christmas movie.
Yes.
Plan A was to do Red October in October.
Yes.
Right. And then we realized that the November Revolution was really October, and that's what November, October means in Russian or something like that.
Yeah, because of the difference in calendars.
And then we realized it's a Christmas movie.
Yep. Right.
And so to avoid Seth having to watch some, you know, inane children's movie that I might nominate next year.
I threw out a whole bunch of possibilities for Christmas, including Gremlins. It's very tenuous, but it would be fun.
Yes, it would.
Roald Dahl.
True. But,
anyhow, instead, we decided, well, I asked if the guys would be willing to read a book that I read while I was recuperating from my surgery, while I was on drugs, that I've had on my Nook for...
So that means you barely remember the book, right?
That's why I thumbed through it yesterday, just to write down the major plot points and remind myself of some things. But yeah, it's one of those things where, like, early on when I had the Nook and I was getting, like, I think it was one of the Nook Daily deals.
Wow.
And I looked it up, and I think I knew that the movie No Escape was based on it. And so I picked it up, and I think I read the first chapter, and then just never came back to it. So I read it while I was laid up from shoulder surgery. So I asked these guys to read it. It was a first-time read for all of us.
Yes.
Yep.
I did fail to warn Colin not to spend any money on it. a little spoiler about what we think of the book. Yes, 1987 Richard Hurley novel.
Mm-hmm. And now, because of this book, we will now refer to each other as Mr. Heasley, Mr. Ralston, and Mr. Kesky.
Have we earned that, though, Colin?
I hope so.
Okay. Yes.
Well, no, you don't have to earn the mister. You got to earn the no mister.
Yes.
Right.
You got to earn the informal.
Yeah. If you're super, super, super intimate friends, not big I intimate, obviously.
Because you can't have that on this
because
island.
Because you can't have that on this island, yes.
Not allowed in the village.
Right. So the concept of this novel is that there is a penal colony, and it is called Surt, which I think is an actual Surt island.
Yes.
Yep. Okay. Somewhere in the British Isles.
Yep.
A long way away from everything. And
not that far. You can still see the mainland from the island, apparently, according to the novel.
Okay. And
but far enough.
Some bad criminals have been sent there and told to just survive.
Good luck.
More or less.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. They're level 6 criminals.
Right.
So that's reserved for the worst of the worst of the worst, or whoever gets badly labeled.
Category Z, right? Yeah.
It's like the equivalent of being banished back in the day.
Yeah. Sentenced to transportation.
Right.
Right. So it's Australia. So this one's for you, Michael. Don't read the book if you don't have to. Yeah. What do we say about this one? In terms of its position in speculative fiction, you know, it's not really like a techno thriller. It's near future. I think, James, you said it's set in 97, so it's
right.
10 years.
It's set about 10 years after it was written. So near future.
Yeah.
You know.
And I gather the, like, science fiction that tries to say something, that it's trying to say something about the prison system.
Right.
Not totally clear on how successful it is at that or anything else.
It might be talking about the futility of incarceration as a punishment.
Right, but I mean, with the whole point of a penal colony, right, is that you're never expecting to get these people back into society. You have thrown them away.
Yes.
And it's a valid thing to say, right, that, well, we're just throwing people away. Is that what we're doing now?
Yeah. Well, or hiding them away, because most of the people that were in the village were political prisoners. At least the leadership of the village was political prisoners. Right?
Right, because one of them was like a Northern Irish.
Yeah, they were trying to get out terrorist to go basically blow the lid off the thing from a political perspective.
Yeah.
Which they sort of maintained in the movie a little bit. I guess we'll get to that.
Maybe we should talk a little bit about the plot of the book.
Yeah.
Okay. And I do want to make a distinction between the plot of the book and the plot of the movie, because this is extremely lightly adapted.
Yes.
You know, this is really a retelling of Escape from Alcatraz, the movie from the 70s with Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, a lot of ways, yeah.
So
the movie is, or the... Oh, yeah.
The book is, and the
book
movie
is.
Are.
Okay. Yeah.
It's this whole, I don't think I belong in here, and so I'm going to escape. Mm-hmm. It's an escape movie. And then the prison setting is the dressing that changes over time.
Yeah.
So whether it's Alcatraz or an island or a space station in some cases.
It reminded me a little bit of Shawshank too, from that perspective.
It reminded me a lot of Shawshank.
I'm wrongly in here. I need to get out of here. I'm afraid of things happening to my bum.
Yes. Well, things happen to his bum.
Yeah, that's true.
So our main character is put in this island and he's innocent. And the island is set up by the British government and it is for the prisoners that are completely irredeemable. And on this island, there are no guards or no structure. Everything is remotely monitored. They make sure you can't get off, but they really don't care too much what you do while you're there. Mm-hmm. And so the people over on the island have naturally segregated themselves into several large gangs, one of which is the village, which is run by the father. Right. And they tend to be the more socially adept, I guess, of the group. You know,
More civilized, I would say.
Yeah, more civilized.
Yeah. Very basics of civilization from like dawn of human time. Agricultural revolution.
Yeah. And it's kind of styled as almost like a socialist utopia, but it's definitely also an autocracy.
Oh,
definitely.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting. And then there's the outsiders where there's several gangs and they like a good gangbang.
Yep.
And this is what I will say, like, some of the stuff in the book is not for the faint of heart. Some of the depictions of, it mentions prison rape quite a few times. It seems to be all the outsiders really think about.
And cannibalism.
And cannibalism. Right. True. Yeah.
It mentions it and alludes to it. On the bright side, there's never any explicit scene of it happening.
Right.
Like, thank God.
Yes. Yeah. And there's a lot, the implicit threat of it all the time. You know, for example, our main character, when
it's definitely a looming threat the whole time throughout the entire book.
Yeah. You don't want to be caught
throughout the entire narrative. Yeah. It's a looming threat. But I'm just like, I think I was the last one to read it. Right. And based off what you guys are telling me, I expected something absolutely terrible. Yeah. And by the time I finished, I'm like, thank God that didn't happen.
Yeah. There was always the threat of it.
Yeah. But, You get what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, so the other part here is, how would you pronounce the main character's name?
Rutledge? It's totally Rutledge.
So I always, in my head, pronounced it Rutledge.
Ignore the OU. That's a British, man. British spelling. Favor. You don't say favor.
It's not like we don't know British people who couldn't tell us if we asked them.
Right. So we got to ask Phil, how would you pronounce
Rutledge. It's totally Rutledge.
Yeah. Okay.
And so the goal of the leaders of the village, the autocrats, the father, are to get off the island. And they have been using the village's labor to do this. And then they announce that there's a bunch of us that are going and we're holding a drawing for the rest of you to come.
Yeah.
And we'll leave all the instructions so you can duplicate what we do if it's successful.
Right.
So that you can also leave if you want.
And we'll try and get the word out and hopefully this place will get shut down. Right. Which, you know, for some people I feel like would be not great news. Right, because the life in the village is pretty good, for prison. Right, they're kind of self sustaining.
Right,
they get to sort of be men. Right, Rutledge has that speech that he gives about how it's given them back their dignity in some way.
Yeah, I got the sense in the book that this was a second chance moment for Rutledge, and I texted you guys this, but I didn't want you to tell me anything. But what was going to happen? but I had the overwhelming sense from where his story was going, that this was his redemption story, so to speak.
Yeah.
And it felt like in the end, he almost was getting towards a better point in life in prison than the life he had outside of prison.
Yeah, I mean, he talks about how he was kind of a soft, office worker kind of person.
And to your point, this is a better life opportunity for a lot of these guys than they would have outside.
Yeah. Now let's talk about the village, right? One of the things that they do is new arrivals and new equipment drops always end up there.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they don't just accept anybody in, which makes sense because they're being brought over from maximum security places, right?
It's a vetting process.
And the way they vet them is they send them out on their own for a period of some days, right?
Right.
And so Rutledge ends up having to do 6 days.
6 days.
Right.
Yeah.
And basically immediately gets set upon by
outsiders.
By outsiders. But we'll get back to that.
Others.
Others.
This is Lost.
And within the village, there are some strict rules, right? You, there's things you can't do. And one of the things you can't do is have any kind of intimate relationship with any other person.
That's right. Right.
If you want to drive up to the gas station of love, you have to use the self-service pumps. and,
nice.
And so, you know, this is what I want to talk about. I'll get your input on this. I feel like this book is quite homophobic in a lot of ways that makes sense mm-hmm. given the time it was written. I can put myself back into what I thought of such things in the 80s, especially with AIDS, where right. it's this terrifying scourge that basically is created by gay sex. That's,
right. That's and basically only happened what we to gay thought. People.
Right. Yeah, only happens so, to gay
yeah,
people.
Exactly. Or druggies, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
the dregs of society. This only occurred on them.
Right. Right. And so like the POV of the author and of the main character is very much steeped in that. And mm-hmm. so it comes off really kind of homophobic. And so if somebody was going to read this, I would warn you, you might not like the POV of the main character or of the village.
Right.
Well, at one point, the main character finds two other characters engaged in homosexual sex.
Yeah.
And then mm-hmm. he's left with this dilemma because the people, they were his friends. Right. He says,
yeah.
Well, this is illegal in the village and it's to the benefit of the village that nobody be doing this, even if it's consensual. Right. And so.
Is it though? What is the threat? That's what I was trying to figure out.
I don't understand what the threat is, but okay. you know, they have evolved right. this social structure and that, mm-hmm. so, and he buys into it.
Well, he does because he kind of muses that, you know, not everybody can push down their urges. Like, you know, yeah, I'm fine pretty much for the rest of my life. He says, you know, but some people, you know, can't deal with that weakness. But
right.
he says what they were doing to each other was not only sordid and depraved, but also, given the medical risks, antisocial in the extreme. So he seems to think that gay sex creates AIDS.
No, he's saying that gay sex has medical side effects that can be dangerous when you exist in a society where there's no medical care. And so I want to be clear here. I am not making a statement against homosexual sure. sex because sure. we live in a society in the United States where people mm-hmm. can choose to do that.
Yeah.
It is not illegal. I don't believe it should be illegal.
Yeah. I don't necessarily agree that, like, I understand what you're saying, but for me, like, reading the characters' minds, I think they think that gay sex creates AIDS.
Well, I don't think they necessarily mention AIDS.
Well, they mention AIDS a number of times.
Yeah.
And you know, the father basically says, nobody in this village has AIDS or I can't remember what the other...
HPV.
No, it wasn't HPV. It was
HPV. He didn't say what... It is basically HPV, though. It was another term for HPV.
Okay. Basically, he's saying nobody yeah. has it because nobody's yeah. having sex, right?
It was... Hep C. That's what it was. I think he said HCP yeah. or HPC or something.
HCV, I think.
Yeah.
Hepatitis C.
HCV. That's yeah. what it is, I thought.
Yeah. And it just, like... A lot of science fiction is very forward-looking and high-minded and progressive, and I feel like some of this stuff just felt regressive to me.
Yeah.
For just being like,
right.
Well, yeah, that's depraved what they're doing. And well,
here's the funny thing, though. If we had read this in the 80s, mm-hmm. I don't think we would have had that view. We've learned some things in the intervening 40 years.
Yeah. And so, like, if you want to know what people thought in the 80s, straight people, for the most part, thought in the 80s.
Read this book.
Yeah, this book will give you a good insight.
If you want to know what a straight white dude thought.
So then, 80s. Yeah. So then, you know, you can give us credit for being so high-minded now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and so to further this, toward the end of the book, and I mentioned, he turns in his friends for doing this.
Mm.
And it's dealt with by the autocracy because one of the two people that...
Well, he didn't turn in his friends.
No, he didn't turn them in.
He wrote a letter to them.
That's right.
In secret,
he warned them.
Threatening them. And yeah. so they would stop because he didn't want them to get kicked out
right.
either.
Yeah.
Was
yeah.
it. Because
yeah.
they were his friends. He didn't want them to get kicked out of the village for...
Right. And that was another thing where I think he patted himself on the back for that decision.
He totally did.
They've been nice to me, so I'm not going to turn them in, you know?
Yeah.
Totally did after he saw the effects of his note. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was probably a good thing to do, right? Because eventually they're going to get caught.
But even at the end, I mean, at the end, the guy thanked him, which was kind of like...
He thanks him and dies.
I know. I hate that part. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Way to totally justify the pat on his back.
Bury your gaze at sea.
That's right.
Yeah. So anyhow, I noticed it right away and I was like, this is, it's problematic.
Yeah. On the flip side, you got the critique of the prison system. So.
You do have some of that. Yeah. And you know,
of a broken prison system.
and I'll say this too, right? It's not unrealistic that with a bunch of hardened criminals like this, you could end up with some really bad stuff happening. And I'm glad, like you said, James, that it's not depicted.
Yeah.
It's just, it's constantly mentioned. It's right. In the background. Like immediately he gets set upon by a couple guys. One dude whips it out and Rutledge cuts it off and ends up, you know, killing the two guys. And then he gets caught by Martinson.
Yep. Yeah.
Who is going to auction him off for,
right.
For future, you know,
fresh meat.
Yeah. Yeah. And they call them the new meat, right?
New meat. It's meat. It's back
pretty on the nose that one of the main gang guys who has
Academite.
Yes.
Why did I have to learn that word?
I already knew that word. If anybody doesn't know, Academite is the term for a boy who is used by a pederast. So that's the kind of book this is. And of course, the guy who has one, his name is Pedo.
Right.
I thought, okay, that's as on the nose as it can be.
Pedo.
I mean, it's spelled P-E-T-O, but you pronounce it and it sounds just like in the IT crowd, right?
Yeah.
The guy's name is Peter File. Paging Peter File.
Oh,
and so, yeah, there's the various gangs. Martinson, I don't know. Okay, so the book is really unfocused to me. I think if it had stayed on the main character or picked two characters,
probably would have been a much shorter book.
It would have been a much shorter book.
Or at least tighter plot line, right?
It's weird because halfway into the book, all of a sudden you find out that Martinson has injured himself badly in essentially starting a war.
Right.
And he's ended up with a broken leg. But he started fighting between Peto and Houlihan.
Right.
Because he just, you know, I think he wants to, he doesn't really want to run stuff. You find out he's a religious fanatic.
No, he didn't want to run things. He wanted to consolidate the gangs under one leader so he could attack the village so he can go kill Frank.
Yeah,
Frank.
So Frank's who his father. Yeah.
Yeah. He's got some vendetta against Frank's, which I kind of forgot it. I don't remember what it was now.
And it's all framed in apocalyptic imagery too, of where he thinks this is his mission from God.
Yeah, I forget what his deal with Franks was, honestly. But that, I know that was his focus.
He wanted to crucify him.
So he was just working behind the backgrounds to unify the gangs so they have enough manpower and win by numbers to attack the village.
Yeah.
Because unless they did that, the village would have hosed him over. Which the village still hosed him over in the end.
With hoses.
Yep. Literally, fire hoses.
Doing fire, yeah. And that got the attention of the people watching above, and so then they came down and almost lost the boat and everything else.
Yep.
And
So Martinson kidnaps him, and then I think he wanted to use the fact that he had this guy captive as cover for his going and starting the war. Because everybody knows, well, you're home because you've got this guy and you said in the morning, we're going to auction him off. And then he goes out and starts something. Because that gives Rutledge the chance to escape. And he
kidnaps
place.
The goat or something like that.
He cuts the head off the goat. That
Yeah, that's kidnapped. It. Yeah. Right. Not kidnaps the goat. Yeah.
Houlihan had taken the goat from Peto.
Right.
And then Martinson went in there, cut the goat's head off, and mounted it someplace to start something between the groups, right?
He did a Godfather.
yeah, more or less. Rutledge escapes and ends up having to kill somebody else with a crossbow and makes it back to the village where they immediately check him to make sure that he hasn't been interfered with because if he had, they wouldn't let him back in.
Yeah.
And that's another one of those things where I just feel like, how contagious did they think AIDS was? I mean, I remember in the 80s, right? There was a lot of misinformation about sitting on a toilet or you know, somebody.
I mean, back then it felt like wildfire, right?
yeah. And as we learned more, we're like, okay, as long as you're not as long as you're careful, you're probably fine, right? As long as you're not touching blood, or mucous membranes, that kind of stuff. They basically told him, if anything had happened to you, you'd be out of luck. We'd kick you back out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's an interesting selection technique because they're not selecting based on character. They're almost selecting based on, you know, survival skills and violence, which doesn't seem to be the culture they're trying to sustain.
Yeah. Yeah. And okay, to be clear too, Rutledge is an everyman, right? He's Douglas Quayle from the Total Recall story, not Doug Quaid from Total Recall movie.
Right. And yet when he gets outside, he's a genius with a knife and stalking and hiding and other kinds of things.
I think he gets lucky. He does have a mind for math and physics, and so he's able to kind of figure out the crossbow.
Yeah, he's got numbers.
Yeah.
The maths.
Yeah. Yeah, I noticed I was reading it on the Nook, and it said 61%. Into the book, that's when we learn that Martinson has these weird religious views. It was very strange. And like I said, I feel like it's a little unfocused and it like Like, do we need all this background about what's going on with the outsiders? They could just be a threat. You could just have them attack more than once. Instead, you have this long buildup to finally there's an attack, and then it's just over because of the flamethrowers.
Right.
And it's through Martinson's point of view, and he's a weirdo, and so it's not told in any kind of straightforward way. It's kind of through his you know, slow-mo apocalypse.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, it wasn't clear what the heck actually happened.
Yeah, I mean, he gets burned, but not killed. Right. And then he goes, he's like, oh, father's in there, and he goes in there, and then he gets conked over the head, and he's dead. It was very anticlimactic.
Yeah.
Climactic. So, yeah, the soldiers show up, and they're like, hey, you guys need to stop fighting, and they gas everybody. And then they come down, and then it's a tense scene where they're looking around for any contraband. You know, they confiscate the
trying to bury the flamethrowers.
Now, I liked the interaction with Franks where the guy's like, well, you're not going to get any more paraffin. You know, you there's rules out here, and he's like, like the rules that we're going to get paraffin. you've been so carefully, you know, making sure to deliver everyone's mail and everything. You've been really taking care of us, but they won't take any of the injured back to the mainland because they might have AIDS.
Yeah. Well, they're the people on the island. You just can't trust them.
Right.
So.
They've already been disregarded by society. Who cares?
Yeah. So we didn't mention there's Obi as well, who's kind of helping Martinson, and he tries to go turncoat to get a spot on the boat because he's realized that they're building they call it a catch.
Catch.
And he wants a space on it. And then he realizes I've made a huge mistake and they call his bluff and they're like, well, what are you going to do? I guess we just have to kill you then. And so they kind of turn him double agent, and he warns them when the attack is coming.
Right.
And so the attack happens, then the military comes in, they inspect everything, they leave them alone again, and now it's time to head out on the boat. Kind of an interesting, you know, A-team build of the boat, you know, and it has to, it's essentially a submarine at first.
Yeah, it's like a surface submarine. Well, that's what it catches. It's enclosed on top.
Okay.
And they keep everything enclosed. That's why they have the people swimming it out, I guess, right?
Right.
Only Franks and I forget the other dude was inside. But then once they clear the eye, they unload everything, pop up the sail, everybody gets on board, and they're on their way.
And there's
except a couple moments. Face who floats out to sea.
Ojoku, Ojuku.
Oju. I always call him Oju because it's easier to read that way.
Yeah.
Oju?
Well, Oju.
He's juice?
Oju. Oje.
Well, maybe one of the orcas made a meal of him because they come across a big pod of orcas.
Oh, yeah.
I think the orcas is that how cool. His suit gets compromised?
I think so.
I can't remember because his suit ends up compromised.
Maybe.
So he's,
I don't remember.
He's taken on water and it's cold water. And so he ends up.
Well, I remember them saying that the orcas were not, they didn't really do anything to them. They just ignored them. They poked them to see what they were and then
normally
left.
They won't eat people, right? But they were wearing pigskin or goatskin dive suits, right?
Dry suits,
they make it to land and it ends with him basically making his connection flight to his final destination. And Franks has had the resources to get new IDs for everybody.
Right.
So.
Right. Yeah. He's been, in his letters, he's been putting out code.
Yeah.
So that they know that they're coming and he has a medical problem and that's why they're leaving.
Right. Yeah. And he does want to get back and get the word out and say, hey, look at the screwed up stuff that's happening in your prison system.
Right.
And he thinks people will care.
Norway would care.
Norway would, yes. So
I did learn something that says this is not so science fiction-y because it happened.
Well, Alcatraz.
Penal colonies exist, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, to the extent that they describe in the penal colony. So in the 1930s, as part of the Russian purge, they decided that the whole subclass of rich landowners, the kulaks, needed to be gotten rid of. Mm. So they rounded up about 6,000 of them and dropped them onto an island with no food, no supervision, and only perimeter guards outside of this island, which is in the middle of a river of all places. It's not out in the ocean. And what happened was that after 2 weeks, there were only 2,800 people left of the original 5,000, and they were all evacuated and taken other places.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, have you guys ever seen the movie Rescue Dawn?
No.
It's a Werner Herzog Vietnam movie with Christian Bale.
No.
Steve Zahn. They talk about in that, right? Like, yeah, they can get out and they can crawl under the walls, but the jungle is the prison.
Right.
And, what are they going to do? They don't have the resources to be able to survive outside the prison, which... Of course, they do eventually get out, but
Right.
I think that might be the tagline for the movie. The jungle is the prison. And that's what this reminds me of, you know, the ocean around it, right? There's no fences other than the ones that you build to keep the outsiders out.
Right.
And that's mostly hedges, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I didn't like this book.
No, not... Yeah, the fact that he's wrongly imprisoned kind of gives him some justification as a character, but...
Yeah.
Then the fact that he buys into it all and he never seems to be upset about the fact that he's falsely imprisoned, not that he could do anything about it at that point.
He kind of resigns himself to being imprisoned, I guess, a cert, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's hierarchy of needs, right?
You're
in a penal colony, you got to survive. But yeah, he's not a super compelling main character. And it wasn't a super long book, but it read longer than it was. Weird shifting POV where all of a sudden now we're with Martins and for 40 pages, I didn't know why we were doing that. You know, why was it important that we got to see that he went and killed Houlihan and his catamite?
So. Right. I did not like the book, but I didn't really like it. I don't know.
Okay.
Does that help?
Yeah. So
I wouldn't reread it.
Should we move on?
Let's.
So, had either of you seen No Escape before?
Nope.
No.
I saw this movie in the theater.
I've seen Fortress at some point.
Oh, the Christopher Lambert
one?
I get them mixed up, actually. And there were a couple of things where I thought, oh, I remembered that happening. But no, it's a...
Yeah.
So, yeah, the movie... This is an 80s movie.
Totally.
Right down to the Foley work. It was not made in 1981. It was not made in 1982. It was made in 1980-14.
Yes.
Meaning 1994, directed by Martin Campbell, starring Ray Liotta, Ernie Hudson, Lance Henriksen, Ian McNeice from the sci-fi Dune miniseries. He was King, chubby guy.
Yes, yeah. King.
The movie is set in 2022.
Right.
And it says that, you know, essentially corporate prisons have taken everything over. For-profit prisons. I'm like, oh, well, prisons. What a weird, far-fetched thing that is.
Yeah, that would never happen in the United States.
Yeah.
Next year.
Yeah.
You missed one actor, Stuart Wilson. Stuart Wilson is probably better known as playing Don Rafael from The Mask of Zorro, the chief bad guy there.
Right.
Oh, right. No, yeah. And he's the best part of the movie.
He is the best. Yeah. Even though he's completely, you know, batshit crazy.
Yeah.
He was awesome, though.
he did the most of what they gave him, right? Because as happens in movies, right, this is lightly adapted from the novel. There's a penal colony.
Yes.
There's the father. There's a boat.
There's the bad guys.
There's bad guys.
Others.
But they consolidate all the bad guys down to just him. At some point, he says...
There were multiple tribes out there.
There were, right? And then he said, I've deposed the heads of the...
I am the Senate.
And more or less, yes. Yeah.
Yes. He pulled that move.
Yeah. We have Discount Roger Ebert as the warden. I can't remember what his name is.
Lerner.
Then there's a Discount Adrian Brody as the head guard in the prison. At the beginning, I thought it was just like... The scene at the beginning was straight out of Total Recall.
Yeah, totally.
Like the whole design. Yeah, like I wrote down
ship coming to towers and all that
the
stuff.
The prisoners get their ass to Mars.
Yeah. It totally looked like Mars.
Yeah.
That was the most futuristic part about the movie.
Mm-hmm. But they...
Set in the near past.
Much like Total Recall, right? They take an everyman character and they turn him into a weapon. Because here, Ray Liotta is not an office worker, or what would he see, assessor or something?
Yeah, tax assessor, I think.
Yeah. Here, he's like former like Force Recon guy or
Navy Marine SEAL Special Forces is what they say.
And he pops his commanding officer, and that's how he ends up in the prison system.
Yeah. And we learn that about three quarters of the way through the movie, why he did that, his whole motivation for why he's there. Yeah. Although at the beginning... the warden says, you know, we've had your DNA checked and we realize that you have a genetic tendency towards, you know, not respecting authority and blah, 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 blah. And the truth of it is...
That didn't show up on my ancestry, I'm just saying.
No, it didn't? No. The truth of it is he was forced to kill a bunch of women and children in a village and then it triggered his PTSD and...
Right. Yeah.
He decided he didn't want to do that anymore.
He was told there were weapons of mass destruction.
Mm-hmm. That sounds familiar.
This is 1994. So. Chemical weapons. But, you know, it's in the WMD category.
It's in the same,
same
space.
I mean, so I will say, I remember really enjoying the movie and when I saw it in the theater. I had no idea what it was about. And I just liked, I had seen Ray Liotta in other stuff, you know, Goodfellas and things.
Yeah.
And this as playing.
Yeah, I was used to him as like the mobster role.
Yeah.
And I didn't quite. I wasn't quite sold on his action role. So
I didn't mind it. I liked it. He's kind of a wiry guy, and he's pretty stoic. And I like, you know, don't ever turn your back on me again. Right. And then he literally turns his back on him, gives him a weapon.
Right.
And that's how he ends up going to Absalom.
Yeah.
Which is where the island is.
Right. Absalom.
Yes. And there's a little more notions of some high tech technology for it being in, you know, the far future of 2022.
Right. Then your past.
Did you catch the name of the prison that he started off going to?
Mm-mm.
Leviticus.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I think all the Christian, you know, craziness was, you know, incorporated into the prison system.
Sure, sure. The so he ends up, he wakes up, instead of zipped into a sleeping bag in the village, he wakes up in a blanket made of the least feral rats of all time.
Yes.
Yeah.
They were lab rats.
I couldn't tell if that was supposed to be literal or not.
That was crazy with all the rats. Like, where did these all come from? Because, like, just out of nowhere.
Why does he still have eyelids and a nose?
Yeah. So,
So Merrick is the best part of the movie, just because he chews the scenery. He's got the weird piercings above his nose.
Yes.
It's the outsiders are the Mad Max portion of the movie.
Right.
Well, there's a little
Mad
bit
Max
in the
jungle.
Yeah, yeah, more or less.
Yeah.
And I do like Merrick. Merrick's like, okay, here's what's going to happen. Yeah, you're going to fight it out at the pool. And he just immediately, the thing that I mainly remembered was just throws the weapon, spears the guy, fights over.
Yep.
And
range attacks
Merrick's
for
like,
the win.
Extraordinary. Not exactly what we had in mind, but extraordinary.
Yeah, he has this funny levity, but it gets offset by his rampant insanity,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. He's like, I came up with a new game for you. Think you're going to love it.
he's more like the Joker.
Yeah, Agent of Chaos, kind of.
Yeah.
But he also, of course, he is more or less the Martinson character, right? Because he's obsessed with Dad, right?
Yeah.
He calls him Dad. Lance Henriksen as the father, which is good casting.
Yes.
Ernie Hudson is kind of the right-hand man. Also, pretty good casting.
Yes.
Yeah, I like Ernie Hudson.
Yeah, he ends up kind of accidentally ending up in the village. Like, he's not trying to get there. He just falls over a waterfall.
He gets rescued.
Rescued after he falls into the water.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he gets hit with like a blow dart or something.
A couple.
Yes.
Yes.
So Dysart in the village is their Q, you know, he's their engineer. What was the guy's name? Thiele or something, who is their engineer in the book.
That sounds right.
Ian McNeice is kind of fun in the movie. I wish they had given him more to do. King in the book is a really nice character.
Right? Yeah.
Like he's really kind to Rutledge and brings him along, and they exchange gifts at some point. It's kind of a sweet friendship. Where here you end up with him being kind of a scold, you know, wipe your feet and wash your face before you shave. And I thought, who would shave? Why would anyone shave when they're in a penal colony? Like if there's risk of infection through shaving, grow a beard.
Yes.
So
he's a germaphobe.
Yes. He's also quite well fed.
I was thinking that too.
Yeah. The other character that I kind of enjoy is Casey, played by Matt Dillon's little brother, Kevin. He's kind of a sweet character because he essentially was part of a high-profile.
He's kind of a jackass, though.
A little bit, but you know, he's sort of innocent, right? He got roped into a kidnapping,
right?
And I think he's just kind of dumb.
Yeah.
Right. And he's portrayed as not being the brightest bulb because then he ends up following.
He definitely doesn't seem like he should be on the island, but.
No. Well, but, you know, it's felony murder, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he ends up following Robbins as the main character, not Rutledge.
Right.
The kind of thing where you're like, why are you changing the names? Well, because. Why not?
Why not?
Distancing yourself from that book might not be a total.
Yeah. They kept father, but that was, and king, but. Mm-hmm. He ends up following Robbins when he goes on his mission, because when he's first in with the outsiders, he finds Chekhov's distributor cap.
Yes.
And realizes at some point that you know, they could use that on a V8 that that Dysart has. And so he's like, I'll go back and get it for you. And he does. And there ends up being, you know, an attack.
A kerfuffle.
The outsiders. A kerfuffle, yes. But it's not the climactic thing. There's an attack early on, not super early on, but
which is repelled.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. It's like halfway through, because that's where I paused the movie.
yeah, that's about right.
I actually kind of like it. Really, for me, the movie really wound down at that point, and I almost thought it was going to be over. And I looked at the time left. I was like, "Oh crap! I'm only halfway there."
Yeah, never mind. Yeah. That's not a good sign.
It's not a super long movie.
It's 2 hours long.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought
it's just under 2 hours.
Just under 2 hours.
1 hour and 58 minutes.
I enjoyed when he goes to get a drink or something, and the guy's like, brain spasm. You know, it took me a while to work on that. And I thought, were they trying to evoke the Pan-Galactic Darko Blaster?
Oh, maybe.
Oh, maybe.
Father in the battle fights with what looks like a gaffy stick from the sand people.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, kind
of. Cool. The whole, you know, somebody gets disfellowshipped out of the Jehovah's Witness enclave, you know, for falling asleep at his post.
Yeah. So interestingly enough, the boat gets blown up.
Yeah.
And so then they're totally. Like, well, what do you do now? And what you do now is you find who the mole on the island is and get them to lure the warden in and steal his helicopter.
Yep. Right.
And that makes everything okay. Not
totally.
did they realize that blowing everything up would attract the attention of the warden? Because that's in both the book and the movie, right? Where if there's too much that happens, right, then it's people are going to notice it, right? Satellites are going to see it,
yeah.
And we don't want anybody to know about it, and so they end up. He ends up.
Did they know? I don't think they.
I don't
knew.
Know if they knew.
I don't think
yeah.
they knew.
But like at the at climactic battle, right? Nothing happens, right? The outsiders all come in, and yeah. it's a reverse Trojan horse kind of thing. Where they get them into the city, and then Robbins blows it up with the weapon that he stole.
Right.
Which, I'm not sure where that weapon came from, but we don't ask those questions.
But he had it. So.
Oh, he stole the weapon? Who had the weapon?
Yeah, Marek.
Merrick had the weapon. Had we don't know how he got it either.
Right, right.
Right. Yeah. Well, we don't know how they got half the crap they have, so.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't a crossbow.
Wasn't a crossbow, yes. No. Yes. Didn't look like something that would have washed up shore because it did have the scavenging parties, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so there are some points of fidelity to the book, yeah. right? Because you have the scavenger guy who was kind of funny. So he's always trying to make a deal for Robbins's boots.
I like those boots.
and then the fact that they had been hiding in a cave, essentially, for months, mm-hmm. completing the construction on the boat and trying to get it to not make as much of a thermal profile.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which made no sense at all, because engines have thermal profiles.
Right.
I mean, cloaking devices exist in science fiction, and they don't make a whole lot of sense either.
Yeah, but on that island, do you really think they have the tech to do that?
It's the future, Colin.
That's true. And, you know, I guess that is the interesting part, because you might think the bad guy of the movie is Merrick, and he is a bad guy, but the chief bad guy is the warden. And his job is to hide what's going on the island so that he can continue to be paid for running all these things. And he's trying to hide things from the government who would only see what's going on if they make a big enough thermal or other kind of disturbance.
Right. Government oversight is lacking.
Yep.
Yeah.
No way. That wouldn't be lacking in a private prison system.
Yeah. Yeah. I did enjoy Marek's death scene. It was an excellent impaling.
Yes,
true.
Saruman kind of ending, but even gorier.
It reminded me of something.
Not Saruman?
No, like another 80s, 90s movie where you fall onto an impalement. And it just seemed to be the thing to do if you didn't want to directly kill somebody.
It wasn't
bad enough they would fall 40 or 50 feet onto something hard.
I didn't kill them, the pike did.
That's right. I fell onto this fence, which was conveniently located here.
And, and so, yeah, they figure out that King is the mole, and they get him to fool the warden into landing where they can ambush the chopper.
Right.
And then they fly off in the chopper.
Fly off in the sunset.
I guess they're not that worried about the gunships that are coming in.
The other gunships.
The other gunships. Yes. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, they can do the scout walker against the other scout walkers kind of thing from Return of the Jedi.
And they know the route out. That was the other thing. I'm like, do you know where you're going?
Yeah.
Well, presumably the chopper has navigation in it, right? I mean, because the people that own the chopper don't know that it's been taken yet.
Presumably.
And it's almost definitely got some kind of tracer on it.
Right. Yeah. Definitely low-jacked for sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
This is funny. Yeah. A lot of holes, but hey.
Lots of character consolidation.
Early 90s
and plot consolidation.
Right.
Yeah. So.
So, what was your beef with the movie, Colin? You had a list. Tell me the ways.
I don't really have a list. It's just there's so many things that are odd about it. You know, I'm not a big fan of the book, and I'm not a huge fan of the movie. And so I tried to figure out, well, what went wrong with it? And I don't think it was well written. I don't think it was well directed. I don't really have a beef with any of the acting that was there. Like, I think they told,
Robbins,
you have PTSD, so you should act like you're wooden and stony and, you know, unavailable all the time. Kind of like Anakin in the Star Wars prequel movies, which really takes away an actor's ability to truly, you know, really emote. You know, he was told to be wooden and stoic.
Yeah.
Cold. Yeah.
Cold.
Yeah, that's been it. Like, in all the other movies I've seen him in as like the mobster guy, he was always this like charismatic sociopath.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Essentially. And you got none of that in here.
No.
It didn't really work with him. I wasn't sold on it.
It wasn't, I don't know, I didn't mind it. It wasn't quite to the level of like Will Smith in After Earth, where they're like, let's take the super charismatic actor and have him be completely emotionless.
Yeah. It wasn't that bad, I'll give you that.
No, I mean, he showed little bits of emotion, right? It's some levity, right? Because when he comes into King's place and he tells him to wipe his feet, there's 600 million, you know, germs on a human foot. And he says, so I guess that's a cool 1.2 million then, huh? Or 1.2 billion.
Yeah. I did like some of his quips, though. They were entertaining. They were corny and dumb and entertaining.
Yeah, King had some great line stealers. And I really liked the Stewart character, you know, Merrick.
Yeah.
It's just that he would go from like coldly calculating and evil to batshit crazy. And I'm like,
Joker. There you go. Mm-hmm.
And he reminded me of another character, and I still cannot place it. I think it might be a Frank Langella thing, but that's not right either.
Could be. You know, speaking of Frank Langella, we still need to do Dave as a reverse non-science fiction adaptation of Double Star.
Yes. That's an April Fool's thing.
Yeah, that would be fun. He I think he was the Stuart Wilson. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Was the main bad guy in like Lethal Weapon 3 or 4.
Oh, where I bet he was good.
Yeah, he was.
In, he was similar.
He was in one Lethal Weapon. Yeah. I can't remember. Yeah.
He was a little coked up.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I feel like he made more out of the character than the spare parts that it was put together with. Right. And if you look this one up on Letterboxd, it's a 3.0, which is like a very mid
out of rating,
right? And to me, I was like, this is the most 3.0 movie.
Wait, three out of what?
Out of five.
Five. Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the middle of the road. I mean, that's not.
I mean, it's
that's watchable.
It's that's. I think this movie is watchably bad.
And
I can't really. It's to me, it's a C+. Mostly down to Merrick.
Yeah.
It's a B early 90s dumb action movie.
If you see it as the 80s movie that it is,
right,
made in the 90s. I mean, you said that about Total Recall.
Totally.
That was closer to the 80s.
Yeah. I think I would have rather had Arnold in Robin's position, but...
Nobody would have underestimated him, though.
That's true. That's a good point.
Yeah.
He's so big and huge, they're just...
Right. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like having a Bruce Willis in Die Hard.
There are a couple nice moments in the movie. Like I enjoyed Casey, you know, in his kind of innocent naivete... and stupidity.
I hated that guy.
You didn't like him?
Not at all.
But I also like Dysart. And, you
know, he deserved what he got.
Yeah. Dysart was the one guy who was like, no, I'm not leaving. You know, I supplied a bomb to a terrorist organization and 50 people died and I deserve to be here. And, you know, there were nice little moments in there, but it didn't make a cohesive, you know, the whole movie wasn't that way.
Yeah. But if the point of the book is to talk about a condemnation of the prison system and that it doesn't reform people, then... having a character that accepts their imprisonment kind of doesn't go with that.
I mean, it's kind of like the Shawshank Redemption, right? Where Red says that he's the only guilty man in Shawshank.
Red says that.
Yeah. Yeah. Because he has been rehabilitated. He just doesn't realize it. Because he accepts that the version of him that committed that horrible crime is not this old man that he is now. And that's why they let him out.
Yeah. Oh, no, I think he finally stops caring so much.
Yeah.
So go ahead, Sonny, and check your boxes and stamp your forms. And
yeah, and, you know, Shawshank obviously has some things to say about the prison system as well. It doesn't mean that someone can't be rehabilitated. It just means that it's not necessarily structured.
This might not be the way to go about it.
The funny thing is, in the early 90s, I read a bunch of Chuck Colson books, who was a famous – he was somebody who was arrested during the – as a result of Watergate, he worked for Nixon and became a Christian while he was in prison. And so he started these prison ministries as a result of kind of seeing that side of incarceration. And in some of his books, he talked about different ways of doing incarceration and places that were, you know, kind of open and allowed people to farm and that kind of stuff were places that had better rates of, lower rates of recidivism.
I sent you guys a link to that. I don't know if you read it.
I didn't get to read it. So I did want to ask you.
Yeah. So the Norway prison system is very much like that. And especially in particular, they do have an island prison. It's on an island. Part of it's reserved for the prisoners. But it's all like, I want to say it's all open. It's an open area. It's not like walled in or whatever. And all the houses are all just like little single unit homes with a bed and a television and bathroom. It's like camping.
Like yurts.
And then they have all these land reserved for farm. And that's what they do. So all the prisoners work on the property, whether it's farming or maintaining the utilities, et cetera. They do something to sustain themselves on that island. And then the island also has, and this is, I think in all the other prison sites too, they have hotels for families to actually come visit.
So this is not a maximum security thing.
No, they don't have any. I don't think they have any maximum security prisons. Period. Or they might have like one.
Well, all their violent offenders are invading the U.S. Obviously,
right? And so you know that's the antithesis to CERT would be this island they have in Norway.
Yeah,
it's like this is what it could be, but then we have CERT. You know, so
you have to have guardrails on anything, right?
Yeah,
and yeah, you have to make some
in this way the guardrail is the ocean. I think it's in the Arctic Ocean or something like that. Well, there's so you're not going anywhere, but you know it's surrounded by forests too, but anyway. And the Norway prison system I think is the lowest rate of recidivism in the world.
I'm impressed that we both said recidivism correctly the first time.
I've heard you say it, and so I will say it correctly.
Okay.
Unless the word is nuclear.
So recidivism is the nuclear option? Yeah. So, you know, should we rank them?
Movie book.
Go on.
Movie book.
Yeah, I go movie book as well.
Yep.
I think I like the movie better than you guys did. Peter didn't seem to enjoy it.
No.
He was texting me. I was like, oh, come on. It's an 80s masterpiece.
I'd rather watch Commando.
There we go.
Predator.
Yeah. So something we've done in the past, and we haven't done it in a while, is...
How do you fix it?
How do you fix the movie to make it better? I don't know.
Right.
I'm not sure what to do with the book.
Yeah.
But how do you fix the movie to make it better? One idea I had is to talk about character development. Mm-hmm. And there is some character development, right? Mm-hmm. Robbins in the beginning is this isolationist... a violent guy who's angry at the world, triggered by the PTSD of the things that he's been forced to do. And because of that, he just wants to be alone. You know, I'm not a joiner.
Right.
I would have liked to have seen more work from the father and his team helping him engage and break that. And so you reveal the PTSD earlier with a fire.
Yeah.
And then that he then goes through this. And then, you know, maybe one of them has had some count. I mean, I'm going way out on a limb. Where you talk somebody out of a panic attack from PTSD and help him begin to integrate in so that he then isn't the violent guy who's just, I'm the biggest, baddest mofo around. I'm going to go in and get your distributor. It's, I really care about what we're doing here now. And so I've seen the distributor and I'm going to go get it so we have a chance to get out. And then you actually make the boat ploy successful.
Mm.
Right? Yes, Michael Lerner, it might be the actual bad guy.
Yeah.
But forget about him. He's done his bad thing. His role is over and done. Mm-hmm. So you lose the mole aspect. You lose a whole lot of other things. Yeah. And that restores a bunch of the fidelity to the book, which I think actually did kind of work. Because the whole mission is to go out and reveal the horrible things happening on the island.
Right. And they keep that.
And that's a story I think you can get behind, because I think they lose that with the helicopter.
Yeah, I agree.
The odds of them being able to successfully get away in that helicopter, I think, are zero or worse. Yeah,
helicopter's way more noticeable.
Yeah. I was just going to park it under.
They could have done away with the first, probably done away with the first battle scene too, which would have been in line with what you're saying. See, to help consolidate things better.
I didn't mind.
They'd probably consolidate more characters too.
Yeah, I didn't mind the first battle scene just to have the outsiders as a threat. Because when I was thumbing through the book last night, because I read this, you know, almost 2 months ago, I was surprised how far into the book it was that we're talking about getting the battle going, right? Martinson is trying to get things going. They're like, in 2 months, we'll do it in 2 months, you know, because he's healing from a broken leg.
Right.
And I'm like, why aren't we getting to this?
Well, you don't attack in the winter. That's where Hitler screwed up.
Okay.
Well, only when he attacked Russia in return. Attacking some enclave of wooden walls and stuff. Something else I think would have worked better is to actually have a motive for Merrick to hate the father. So maybe Merrick had been a part of the village, but in his...
We never learned that from Martin's and Eiley, though, which was annoying.
No.
Yeah, there was something that happened between him and the father, and it might have been in the book, but I don't remember it. But so Merrick, in an effort to try and gain control, starts murdering people. So he's evicted from the village, and he goes out, and because he's charismatic and effective, he becomes the leader of the outsiders, and then he wants to go destroy the village and take it over.
So that's very biblical, right? Right. This is the fall of Satan.
Kind of
Paradise Lost. It's almost like recapitulating that arc. You know, better to reign in the outside than to, you know, to bow the knee in the village. And that would fit with the naming of things, right?
Absalom. Yes.
I think that was in the minds of the people who were writing it. I just don't think it was effectively portrayed.
Yeah, I could not find a lot of side information about the movie. And I think that's because it wasn't very good. It barely broke even on a $20 million budget.
Okay.
Who knows
all what it's all that CG in the beginning.
It looked pretty bad. I mean, even like the explosion of the boat looked pretty bad. Like it's weird to like look at something like The Abyss that's made in 1989 and everything looks so much better than this in 1994. But I think it's one of those... They were so obsessed with if they could, then you know, couldn't figure out if they should, right? It was a practical explosion. Yeah, it probably costs more than doing it CG, but it looks better. So yeah, I think you're onto something in terms of fixing the movie by making a little more focused and having more focus on the character development. I think at some point they realized they didn't have much, and so they just asked Stuart Wilson to just go hog wild and
make this your own.
To me, he managed to save what would have been a dreadful movie and make it watchable.
Yeah.
But failed to make it a good movie.
Yeah.
Anywho, not a great movie, not a great book.
No.
But I did enjoy the movie, and it's free on Tubi and Prime Video, and it's free to watch ad-supported in a number of places.
Oh, so cool.
All right.
Alrighty.
So next month we are going to do The Hunt for Red December. And then the plan is to check out to go see Nosferatu on Christmas Day. Just leave our families behind and go see a vampire movie somewhere around Christmas.
Somewhere around Christmas Day.
Yeah. And then we'll do that for January. And
I could do that. Maybe.
Well, he doesn't get back until January. I know. We can't go see it.
Right. But I could go see it in Sacramento.
Yeah. But we can't.
Without us?
We can't cow at it.
Well, you guys need to come to California then.
Yeah.
Stranger things have happened.
All right. Anyway, thanks everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. And until then, may the road rise up to meet you, and may the book always fall open to where you left off. Bye, everybody.